We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
So I had a lot of fun. I was very fortunate enough because of my friend Neil Gelman from the Gelman team invited me to take part in the VIP event at the Factory, which is a new concert venue. I know, kind of fancy, right? Yes. I can't get myself into stuff like this. I have to rely on far more important people than that. But I'm a huge music guy, and I think people who have listened for years know that. And I'm very excited about going to concerts again. And this place is really amazing. And Steve Shankman is with me this afternoon from Contemporary Productions. He has a long, successful, storied history here in St. Louis with music. Steve, how are you? Congratulations. As you know, the piece is awesome. Blew me away.
Well, you're one of the first people to see it. We had two parties on the weekend for our VIP membership and also sponsors and also for people that are friends of Mike Steinberg and myself. And you were part of that group because you came in with the Gelmans. But Michael Steinberg, as you know, is one of the finest developers that St. Louis has ever had. He's not from St. Louis originally. He came from Omaha, and he worked in Kansas City, then came here. And some of the projects he's done and what he's put his name and family name on is unreal. And when we talked about building this at his, what was the Topman Outlet out at the District, which he named it, I call it the Factory. Whatever we asked for, that was a combination of myself and Jeff Jarrett, that's my partner, and also Brian Karp, who we brought in to run it. I mean, he went for it. So the architect drew it up, and Michael said, well, let's add this and add some art, a lot of art, and let's add this light. Which I named the Galactic Chandelier.
Okay, now you have to. This is what I was going to ask you about. So, if you're in the arena and say you're on the floor in front of the stage, you look up. There's this amazing structure. It's almost like a piece of art, isn't it?
Well, Michael is a. You know, I'm surprised he's not an artist himself or a musician because he loves both. And he came up with this. He met this person, I believe, it was in Denver. And they had done something similar, but nothing the size. This is 40 feet across. This is a gear system with hundreds of lights that has multiple settings, and it adds so much to the night life of the theater. I call it a club, actually. It's the Factory. It's a music venue, 3,000 capacity at its greatest size. You were with 500 people, filled the floor with cabaret seating and the bar. But the light show that is on and off during the performances of my band, the Motown Review, and then we had Jake's Lake, and just when people walked in, it's just amazing. Listen, I've been doing this over 50 years. I remember all the light shows from back in the 60s and 70s, you know, at the Grateful Dead concerts and a lot of the other stuff where people were high as you can get. Certainly not me. But the point of the matter is that this is some light, and it adds so much to the venue.
So you mentioned 3,000. The pageant's capacity is about 1,100.
2,000.
Okay, so, you know, this isn't exactly competition for the pageant necessarily, but how do those two venues sort of seek out different artists? Because there's going to be some crossover, isn't there, Steve?
Sure there is. Well, when I went to Joe Edwards and talked about the idea of building a 2,000-seat theater, our club was because, you know, we already had Planet Hollywood here. That was down on the landing. Then we also had Hard Rock, which was at Union Station, and at the time both were doing very well. And I said to Joe, sooner or later, House of Blues is going to come here, which is kind of ironic because Brian Karp, who runs the Factory, came from two House of Blues, Anaheim and Dallas, Texas, as well as the Fox Theater in Denver. So we're all going to work together. I mean, Pat Hagen's been out to see the factory. I was a partner with Joe Edwards when we built the pageant back in 2000. There are acts that are too big for his place, some acts that maybe can't play at our place because we're booked, that go to the pageant. We are some distance apart. We draw from different communities. So I think we're all going to be great together. Here's the thing. Just like when I built Riverport Amphitheater in 1991, the problem was is we didn't have an outdoor amphitheater. We did the Muni in the 80s and had great shows. Everything from Whitney Houston, David Sanborn, to Al Jarreau, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Rod Stewart. That was in the 80s, mid-80s. So we had to go somewhere because the Muni's too small. And we built Riverport, which is 10,000, on the lawn. So 10,000 seats, 13,000 seats on the lawn. So I think the more venues you have that are quality and they're the right locations, I mean, we're right off the highway at Boone's Crossing at 40. We're going to draw from west. The pageant draws from east. I think we're all going to work great together, and it's going to be great for St. Louis. It's like, how can we only have – why do we have so many radio stations? How many filling stations can you have on one corner? I think we need synergy, and especially now coming out of COVID.
Well, I think you're right about that. Let me offer an example musically here. So I love this band. That's Glass Animals. They're playing. I already have my tickets for next March. But in this particular case, I would say Glass Animals are probably a band that would sell out the pageant immediately. And they're, maybe not capable of doing two nights. So the factory is perfect for them because
they can fill they'll do 3,000 people. Yeah, they're going to do the 3,000 people, as is Deadmau5, as is Mark Rebolette, as is Nikki Glaser. So these are acts that really could have done more than the size of the pageant, so that this is great for St. Louis. Now we have them in a bigger facility and a new facility with lots of stuff that most places don't have. Once again, my hat's off to Michael Steinberg. I mean, he brought me on for booking and marketing and friends and family and put some things together. I have somewhat of a reputation of making things work. And it's just been a great partnership, as I said on stage the other night.
Yeah,
it's the finest partnership I've ever had.
It's awesome. Steve Shankman is with me. One of the things I love your passion for, and we had a brief time to talk about this the other night, but I want you to go into, and this is important for me because I love music and I love the bands and I want to see these bands, but I love great venues. And when I came back here to St. Louis in 2006, I was unfamiliar with the pageant, and I thought, wow, I came from Milwaukee. There was nothing like the pageant in Milwaukee. There's nothing like the pageant in many cities. So in this particular situation, you want that, and Steve, I want you to kind of address this emotional connection that people have for the venue itself. Not only that, but you actually went way out of your way for the crews, for the bands themselves, some of the backstage amenities as well, right?
Well, yeah, because we're competing with lots of cities. There's way more venues today in many cities and new venues like the Anthem in D.C., which is 6,000 capacity, or the Mission Ballroom in Denver. The competition for all these acts, and we're not growing enough acts. So you have to have something that makes the artist want to come play your venue. Old Dominion could play the arena. They could play the Enterprise Center in one night. But because of our friendship with the band, and we've done other things during COVID with them, I produced that ACA show for American Zoos and Aquariums with Old Dominion. They wanted to try something different. It's kind of like when the Rolling Stones in 1978 wanted to play Busch Stadium because they were doing stadium tours, a tour, and Busch wasn't available. The manager and the agent called and said, what about a smaller place, like 3,000 seats? And we did the Stiefel Opera House. Back then it was the Kiel Opera House. So more venues, and you're right, St. Louis is passionate about the Fox. When we built the pageant with me and Joe and Pat Hagen in 2000, who knew if anybody was coming? Same thing with Riverport. We hadn't had an outdoor amphitheater type setting since we did the Muni in the 80s or SIU. But people love the places they go. And the statement I made the other night, and I mean it from the stage as you were there, is you want to be cool about the venue you're going to, not just the artist that's playing there. I want people when they leave their house to go, yeah, we're going to the factory tonight, or we're going to the factory with our friends next week, and we're going to go have dinner at Annie Gunn's or Vito's in the Valley or what have you, and then we're going to go to, here and there afterwards. And, I want them to be passionate about the evening.
Yeah, it's going to become part of their lifestyles. So this is also and I don't know what the plans are, but this is a facility that can really put on some great events. So are you planning outside of concerts and comedy to have people rent the factory for event space as well?
Absolutely. We've had over 100 inquiries and tours and organizations, not-for-profits. But Michael's very community-oriented. That's why the partnership of us booking and him owning, developing his vision, the district, the commons across the street, Chesterfield Mall, that's why this is working so well, because we both think the same way. We want to be very inclusive. We want to have a lot of diverse events that usually go to maybe hotels. We're not competing against hotels. It's the same problem. I have an event I want to do at a hotel, and they have something else that night. So it's just opening up another potential event space. Sure, concerts will be most of what we do, but there will be other even trade shows, small trade shows, but a lot of charitable events, a lot of things from all communities that help support and raise money for what they do. And as contemporaries in the event business, our corporate clients are all looking at it. So don't be surprised to see some of the top 10, 15 companies in St. Louis, whether hospitals or investment companies, they're coming there. They want to do events. As soon as they see it, they want to do something there.
Well,
Gelman Real Estate. Gelman may have a big event out there one night, a dinner for 100 people. Who knows?
Well, there are all kinds of opportunities. And if you walk in, I want you to kind of try. You walk in, and one of the things that's cool about it is there's an entire area that's the width of the entire venue that's you can't see the stage. So, for example, if you're in the pageant at all, you're going to see the stage from that bar or even from the balcony. In the factory, you do have a back bar that can, you know, you can see the stage, but you have a whole area that's outside of that for food and beverage.
Well, we have two lobbies. So we have the downstairs lobby when people come in, and we have the upstairs lobby. And so we'll do events there, pre-events before concerts, but we'll also do events there that, you know, people don't need to rent the factory. If they're going to have 100, you know, Chamber of Commerce in Chesterfield have an event for 100 people, they just rent the lobby. So we have the two lobbies with great artwork. Once again, Michael brought some great tech, stuff in, not to mention all the factory type of fixtures and lighting and things on the glass. I mean, venues never have glass fronts. This is totally glass, floor to ceiling, two stories, 52,000 square feet. It just, did you see the chance on the west wall to see the ads that he put up?
I did not see that,
one?
No.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, you missed that. Full size of the building. And Steinbergville Records, I mean, I think established 2012. But all Art Deco. And then the murals when you came in that Okada did, a guy that does a lot of the graffiti in St. Louis. National reputation now. He has Miles Davis, Tina Turner, Tweety. I mean, Jeff Tweety. I mean, every floor has something else to see. What it's not on the first floor is up on the second floor. And you're right. There's two people we have to please. We have to please the artists. So we have backstage, we have a crew dressing room, a green room, a place for showering, doing their laundry. We got truck parking that's right at the level that stuff pushes in very easily. We have other things back there with the four green rooms for the artists, great catering space for the backstage caterer, as well as a great picnic area on the patio, and all the other things that are in the area. You've heard about the Gateway Studios coming across the street from the airport out there, from the Spirit Airport. Well, they bring in these big artists that they've talked about to record. You could get a pop-up concert within 24 hours. You know, announced by the XL artist is recording. There'll be an acoustic set at 7:30 on Tuesday. I mean, the synergy of Chesterfield Amphitheater, of what we're doing, of this new studio that's never been done in St. Louis, nothing of this caliber. Yeah. This is world-class. And, you know, I mean, I love the people who live in the city. I mean, I'm in the city all the time. But you're going to draw from Kansas City, Columbia, Wright City, I mean, West,
yeah,
North,
that's important.
Hannibal.
You know, I think the geography aspect, I was going to go back to that because when Becky and I left the other night, we were talking about if you're in Columbia, I have a lot of friends in Columbia, that's another 25 minutes to the pageant. If you're in St. Charles County, where that's exploding, and we talk about that quite a bit. So the geography is going to attract different people than some of the other venues for sure.
Right. And like I said, it's good to have venues available. When the acts all come on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, everybody can't have, you can't have two shows in one night. So it's good to have this on stream. It'll bring acts that haven't been here. I mean, when was Mark Revelet here? I can't even tell you. I'm saying when we built Riverport, the Grateful Dead had been in St. Louis for a decade or more. So, I mean, building Riverport brought the dead for multiple nights. I love this city. I love the entertainment vibe in this city. I just think people support music here, the small clubs, you know, the off-Broadways and the BBs and the Oyster Bar. I just think it's a city. Delmar Hall was a great asset.
It was awesome.
You know, a small pageant.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, Joe and Hagen, I mean, Hagen came from Mississippi Nights, have done a great job in the Loop area for music. And there's more to come. I mean, let's be serious. I'm not getting any younger. I want to see this town boil over with great music. We have great radio. We have great support, social media. But sometimes we just lack in the venues in the right place at the right time. And I really think, you know, we've just added on the St. Louis Music Park. You know, I mean, more is better. You know, nobody's going to lose in this business in entertainment.
Steve Shankman, you know this, and we need to kind of scream this from the top of our lungs here in St. Louis because we have so many challenges with crime and other things. But this area, I would say I'd like another city to try to put up their music venues up against St. Louis when all is said and done, because I think we'd come out on top, or at least in the top tier. Yeah.
I do, too. Well, we have to be top at something, and we're starting to get there. And you know my civic pride for things like Cortex and now the mapping project and what's going on with the Taylor family. Listen, every city has crime. We need to do a better job, no doubt about it. But music is the common denominator. We all love music. We love all types of music, hip-hop, EDM, rap. I mean, we have to at some point in our lives, we have to embrace all of this, okay? What happens is everybody has their own way they want to live their life. I appreciate that. But we're on this planet to live together. And we just have to stop looking at the rearview mirror and start looking at the windshield and figure out a way to bring everybody together. The common communicator is music.
Yep, it is.
It's music worldwide.
One of the things I said the other night, I'm going to go out here with Buddy Guy, Stephen. Thank you so much. It was great to see you and Katie the other night. And I love the passion that you're bringing for this. But as much fun as it was to see the venue on Saturday, I can't wait for that first 3,000, you know, it's full packed house in the factory and seeing that and feeling that energy, because that's going to be special.
Well, come on out on July 16th because that's our first show. We're thrilled to see you.
All right, Steve, great to hook up with you. We'll talk soon. Take care.
Take care. Bye now.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We have an audio cut of the day before the evening is up here this afternoon, and I got a bunch to choose from as we started off the show with a potpourri of audio, so some good choices there. That's coming up here before 6 o'clock. I, of course, have talked a lot about critical race theory and some of the things that are happening in schools, and there is a curriculum, an inclusive curriculum roundtable that is being held in Eureka with a group called Missouri Prosper, and Jessica Laurent Clark is with me tonight to talk about what's going on. I think this is going to help some parents out there. Jessica, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for asking.
Well, talk a little bit, first and foremost. I'm not familiar. Maybe the listeners aren't familiar with Missouri Prosper. Is that, and that's a new group, I understand, right?
We are a new group. Missouri Prosper is a statewide association. We are really seeking to help parents make a difference in their schools and in their communities. We are growing rapidly. We're partnering with different districts outside of the metropolitan St. Louis area. We have groups in Kansas City and Springfield, and of course other. It started as a group of Rockwood parents, but of course we have expanded out as we organize more. Everybody is coming together because we have some of the same concerns, and Missouri Prosper is really about unifying those communities, seeing where our concerns are, seeing what the commonalities and the goals are, and finding a plan to move forward that works for our families and our children alike.
So I am a Rockwood parent, so I'm very familiar with some of the things that have been going on the message board there and have tried to help when I can. But the meeting tonight, now, are you mainly, because the group's a little bit broader, certainly, than critical race theory, right? But is tonight's focus on CRT, or am I getting that wrong?
Tonight's focus is about the curriculum. It is an inclusive curriculum roundtable to talk about some of the positive aspects of the curriculum and some of the things that the parents are not necessarily happy with. We want to make sure that we have an open dialogue and that everybody is heard and everybody voices their opinions. And we can see multiple perspectives because, you know, sometimes we're all saying the same thing. We want the same outcome. We just want to do it different ways. So as long as we can get everybody's opinion and understand what we are actually trying to do, then we can find a creative solution that works for everyone.
So who's going to be involved in the meeting tonight?
So we have invited board members. We have a few community members that are coming out. And then we have Missouri Prosper as panelists. And we also have a representative from the FAIR. This is the Foundation Against Intolerance and Racism. And they are actually actively working on a curriculum that may be more open and promotes a cultural exchange of and inclusion. So that's what we have coming tonight.
So essentially just to hear other approaches and other ideas on that front.
Of course, you know, we don't want to create an environment where, you know, we are in competition or one voice is not being heard. We want everybody's voice to be heard because this is about all of our children. All of our children have to deal with whatever curriculum comes out, and to make sure that we're not just putting ourselves in a position to where, you know, it's our way or no way, or it's somebody else's way or no way,
right,
is really our goal.
And there seems to be, you know, and I've talked about critical race theory in particular and some of the things happening in schools for a while now, certainly even before the pandemic, but there is this assertion on the part of people trying to, I guess, position themselves on the other side of this to say that conservatives or people who are against that particular approach when it comes to race don't want the kids to be taught anything about Jim Crow or the Tulsa race massacre or things. And I don't know anyone that I've talked to about this that doesn't want history taught in the schools, some of the horrific things that have happened in this country. I'm for that. I'm sure you're for that. But it's the approach that is in question.
Absolutely. And that is the thing. You know, no one to say that, to make it this partisan issue as if it's only conservatives that don't want CRT or, you know, it's only people on the other side that want it, or this is why we're doing this. We want to have an open dialogue to say, because I am a Black mom. I'm a Black mom that is standing against critical race theory. I think all history should be taught. I think that, you know, we're not denying that race is a thing. Racism is here. You know, it happens. But to encourage a curriculum that is so divisive, it says, okay, if you look like this, then you're an oppressor. And if you don't, you are the oppressed. It's very divisive. And so as a mom of a blended family, how do I sit on one side of the dinner table and tell my kids that aren't Black that they need to apologize or they're being oppressive to my daughters that are Black? So it puts families like mine in a really interesting situation. We want something that harnesses communication. It allows everybody to talk about who they are on a individual level. It allows us to focus on the fact that we want our kids to reach their goals, and those goals look different. And yes, we may come from different backgrounds and different communities, but let's look at how we can move forward versus let's see who we can blame and whose fault it is and just kind of sitting in this whole race thing. I just don't think that it's good for our children.
Jessica Loren Clark is with me. You know, what I think a lot of people would say, and this is the one thing about the message boards that kind of gets out of control, and I've criticized this because I do think there's a lot of parents interested in this issue. They want to get engaged. They're very concerned about the curriculum, and they're not crazy. But there are things that happen sometimes on the message boards in the crowds where there's attacks, there's personal attacks, and things kind of get out of control. So to have a dialogue and a discussion along the lines of what you're describing tonight, I think would be somewhat encouraging.
Yes, that's what we really want. We want everybody to be educated. We want, you know, as long as we all have the same information in front of us, as long as there's transparency, as long as we're building this foundation of, okay, we all really want the same thing, and that's for our kids to thrive. That's for them to be in an inclusive environment, because it's actually doing the opposite of what we're saying that we want to do. So creating a space where everybody can come and really just say, I am here to listen to however you feel. We're not right. You're not wrong. You're not wrong. We're not right. But let's just be educated on what we're actually doing. Let's look at the effect of a curriculum like this long term. It's not just about right now because we're having a lot of racial tension in the media, because that's really what's sparking this. It's about long term and what we are giving to our children and how that's going to affect them as a whole.
I think that's an excellent point, by the way. And I want to explore this because you're described in the pitch, for example, the email from Missouri Prosper says, as a millennial former Democrat and product of well-intentioned but flawed policy. So what brought you around to a different perspective of thinking philosophically about some of these issues? Was there something that happened in particular? Was it a culmination of things?
You know, it was a culmination of things. I grew up and a Democratic household. Culturally, we vote as Democrats without even thinking about it. But as I got older and I started spending my own money, I am starting, you know, my own businesses, I'm paying taxes. Now I'm looking at, where is this money going? You know, if I'm funding ideas that I don't support, I have to look at, you know, the policies and the people that are making the policy. So there are moments where I would have discussions about, let's say, the welfare system and things like that. And they're like, oh, well, that's a Democratic policy. And I'm like, whoa, I didn't know that. And I think that hurts our community. So there was just some eye-opening moment for me that really it challenged the way that I live right now, is saying, okay, the things that I'm voting on, I may have used those in the past, but if I'm looking to build and grow socially, economically, financially, I have to make decisions that are going to be beneficial to me in the future. You know, being in a partnership with somebody that is not Black allowed me to see how, you know, it looks on different sides. So I know that I have two daughters that I birthed. They are African-American. They both speak Mandarin. They have always been in a diverse environment. They've had times where people would tell them, you speak like a white person. And it's like, well, what does that mean? You know, why is proper English synonymous with Black and white? And so
right.
I want to move my children out of this racially focused environment to where it's like, no, I'm human. My skin happens to be brown. I happen to speak proper English. I like to be included in the groups with all kind of people to get a diverse amount, you know, just to move beyond this idea of, if you look like this, this is what that means. And I think CRT does it just in the reverse manner. It says, you know, you want to be included, but now we're moving Caucasian people into a space where it's like, now you're the one that's wrong. So it sounds like reverse racism. So Missouri Prosper wants to just focus on the commonality that we all want our children to have the best outcomes that they have. How do we give them that without isolating a group and making them feel like it's something wrong with them?
I love the approach, and I wish there were more people that would take this approach, no matter what their color is, just to, you know, think of things along these lines. But you know also, and I just, as we close here, I got to ask this question, because there are listeners that are going to be very, very intrigued by your position, and I think cheering you on, but they also know, as I do, and I'm sure that you do, that there are people on the other side, Black progressives in particular, that would say, you're not Black enough with that representation,
oh, no.
Right?
That's true, and I'm ready for that, because nobody gets to decide what it means to be Black. You know, I grew up in a relatively poor household. My mother spent 17 years in prison. My father was in and out of prison. I've dealt with what people call the Black struggle. And even if I didn't, I'm African-American. I'm period. Like that doesn't.
Right.
We don't have to define it. And to do that is to essentially put our people and our children in a position to be victims. And that is what this curriculum kind of perpetuates. And so I'm ready for that. It's okay. Because when they get done, when you see my face, I'm still a Black woman.
I think you're going to be a hero here, Jessica Lorraine Clark. I'm really impressed. I love the conversation. I love what this is all about. And I think parents need to be inspired to get involved and to listen to these perspectives. So good luck tonight with the meeting and then keep us posted, okay?
Thanks, Mark.
That is Jessica Lorraine Clark. A great story. She's with this group now. It's a new group called Missouri Prosper, and there's a meeting. We'll keep you posted on that. I thought she was fantastic. On the heels of that, there was a piece. I've seen a couple of things along these lines, and if I had a little bit more time, maybe I would have asked Jessica about this. So you have the Ellie Kemper situation where now people think that the apology is not enough, that she has to be. The new thing is you have to be anti-racist. So to condemn racism is not enough. You don't believe me? Check out the media guy for NPR, Eric Deggans, who wrote this piece about Tom Hanks. I don't know if you read the piece that he wrote in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago about the Tulsa race massacre. And I read that piece, and I thought it was a good piece. And his advice was that we need to make sure that we teach these horrific atrocities in schools. I wholeheartedly agree. Jessica Laurent, I forgot her last name. Clark, sorry. She wholeheartedly agrees. Let me read something from this particular piece, and this is where the critics get it wrong. This guy Degman talks about Tom Hanks, says it's wonderful that Hanks stepped forward to advocate for teaching about a race-based massacre. And then he says, indirectly pushing back against all the hyperventilating about critical race theory, that's too often more about silencing such lessons on America's darkest chapters. No, no, no. That is wrong. There is no effort whatsoever. And anyone out there who has a lefty friend that wants to talk about these things related to CRT, you correct them, because there is nobody that is fighting critical race theory that wants to silence lessons on America's darkest chapters. I've not run across anyone, because there is nobody that's advocating that. What we're trying to do is separation of races and white children, white people, corporate, whatever it is, trying to feel or made to feel guilty because they are white. There's a very difference, big difference in approach between critical race theory and the way it's seeping into schools with indoctrination compared to just learning lessons about the Tulsa race riot. Nobody is opposed to that. So anybody comes along and talks about silencing lessons, tell them that's absolutely wrong. Ask them to give an example of that, because there aren't any. 542 97.1 FM Talk.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
There is no America. There is no democracy. There is only IBM and ITT and AT&T and DuPont, Dow, Union Carbide, and Exxon. Those are the nations of the world today.
Legendary monologue there from Network. That was Ned Beatty, who died over the weekend. It was in 1976 that Sidney Lumet cast Mr. Beatty as Paddy Chayefsky in Network. He was nominated. He did not win Best Supporting Actor, but he was nominated that year for Best Supporting Actor.
Mark.
And he was in so many different things.
Was he in Deliverance? Was that him?
Yeah. I think I got a Deliverance cut here.
Now let's you just drop them pants.
Drop?
Just take them right off.
I mean, what's this all about?
83 years old, death confirmed by his manager, no cause specified, 150 movies and television products.
Wow.
Started in 1972, All the President's Men, Superman, Rudy, Back to School. He was also, I remember him Homicide: Life on the Street. He was in Roseanne. I don't remember this. He was Ed Connor, the jovial father of John Goodman's character, Dan. I don't remember that. Also in Law and Order, The Rockford Files. I mean, he was just a guy that was in a lot of different things as a supporting actor. And I thought we'd recognize him in case people didn't realize that Ned Beatty had died over the weekend. Now we have this, and I have two options.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
So lately, there's been so much good audio that I feel like I have to do the audio trifecta of the day, because I often cheat and I do like an audio daily double, which is what I think I'm going to do here. But we have such good audio. I could have put the Ned Beatty stuff in there as well. This is from the president at the G7 asked. I just think this is awkward and it won't be played anywhere else. But he's asked a question about whether Vladimir Putin is a killer. And he's a little stumped on the answer. Seems like, here we go.
Well, look, I mean, he has made clear that the answer is, I believe he is in the past essentially acknowledged that he was, there are certain things that he would do or did do. But look.
I assume this is why he doesn't do news conferences.
Very much. Yeah. You know, to a certain extent, you'd have to say, look, he's in a very, very important, tricky, sensitive, diplomatic session, if you will, or whatever you would call it. And you have to be careful because when the U.S. president says something that could be deemed harmful, you
sure.
can have an international incident.
Sure.
On the other hand, maybe kind of be prepped for that answer. Yes. Doesn't seem like one that should be out of the norm, you know, the normal line of questioning. So that was an awkward moment there. Putin wasn't he asked, Andrew, too, whether he was a killer?
Mm-hmm.
Don't I have that?
Yes, that is going to be number 14.
Oh, here it is. Let's play this, too, here.
Mr. President, are you a killer?
Послушайте меня.
Over my tenure, I've gotten used to attacks from all kinds of angles and from all kinds of areas under all kinds of pretext and reasons and of different caliber and fierceness, and none of it surprises me. So as far as harsh rhetoric, I think that this is an expression of overall U.S. culture. Of course, in Hollywood, there are some underlying deep things in Hollywood, macho, which can be treated as cinematic art. But that is part of U.S. political culture, where it's considered normal. By the way, not here. It is not considered normal here.
Oh, my God, that's hilarious. By the way, wouldn't it be great if just one politician would answer a question honestly? Like, in Putin's case, yeah, I'm a killer. Let me name the names, right? So I am going to turn this into a trifecta, because that was our second piece of audio. But this has to be one of my favorites from the weekend, and it's from Bill Maher's show. And every once in a while, I do have to go to Mr. Maher, because he's more critical of our friends on the left because he is a member of the left than most politicians are, because he calls it, one of the things I do like about Bill is he calls it like he sees it,
it's
right?
It's very entertaining.
Well, listen to this.
They have a bad case of progressophobia. That's the phrase coined by Steven Pinker to describe a brain disorder that strikes liberals and makes them incapable of recognizing progress. It's like situational blindness, only what you can't see is that your dorm in 2021 is better than the South before the Civil War. If you think America is more racist now than ever, more sexist than before women could vote, and more homophobic than when were a felony, you have progressophobia and should adjust your mask because it's covering your eyes.
Agreed.
Wow.
You know,
he's right.
Before 2012, every time gay marriage was put before a state's voters, it lost. 35 times in a row. Now it's the law of the land in every state. Even half of Republicans are for it. The other half are for closeted gay sex.
Not a bad line there comedically. But look, and I've said this many times before, Sue, and I think you've heard me say it even recently. I mean, it is absolutely offensive, and even Barack Obama, although he reluctantly does it these days, admits that we have made a lot of progress
yes!
on race issues and many other things in this country. Is it perfect? Far, far from perfect. But I think people are tired of this feeling by many on the left that does not acknowledge any progress and act like we're back in 1950, yep. which is not the case.
Get more at 971talk.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
It's
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.